Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliette. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we have Culinary Class Wars, Episodes 5 and 6. Rise up, O black spoons, rise! Usurp thy pale brethren, those lily-white spoons of yore. Let the world behold the reign of the spoon of black! Let's dig in.
You should see the look on my face right now. Did you borrow this line from...
I'm feeling very Game of Thrones
today. Yeah, was it from Game of Thrones or did ChatGPT write that?
No, I wrote that like word for
either
word.
Either it could have been Game of Thrones or something written by an AI robot.
I don't know what inspired me, but it felt like the rise of the black spoons last week, and it's all editing, but last week it was a very high count of white spoon wins. And these two episodes, we're seeing the black spoons rise up. So that was what inspired me. But you, yes, your face was one of shock.
What happened last night?
Yeah, last night was Halloween, and maybe I had one too many White Claws. Anyway, hi, how are you?
Well, tell us all about Halloween. I mean, people don't know, but we saw each other. But,
like multiple times.
Multiple times. For the listeners, let's act as we don't know what happened in each other's orbit.
But I actually don't know what happened because I did see you, but you were kind of all over. Like, I feel like I walked in a straight line and I felt like you walked in a curly Q infinity.
That's exactly. I would have loved if I had a tracker to see where we went.
I saw you walking one way with your daughter, and then I see your husband just like booking it the other way. And it was
chaos.
This family?
It was chaos. Luckily, our daughter crapped out at like 7:30. She was done. She's like, I don't want any more candy. I'm ready to go home.
That was my little one too this year. She went down to a street that there's like a very popular street close to us. The people who live on the street buy 1,000 pieces of candy every year. Like, that's how massive the presence is on the street. And we never go there because it's too crazy. But my little one went with her friends last night. And she goes home with my husband early. And she's like, what a wild night. And she had maybe like a half a bucket. And she's like, that's enough. I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had a taste of that crazy street. And yeah, she was done. I actually got ditched by both my children this year. Oh, I ended up sitting on a stoop with a friend and just drinking.
That day. I know. Yeah. My son was later like, why was Auntie Leanne at somebody else's house giving away candy? I was like, this is just what she does.
She adopts new families.
Yeah.
And just drinks on their porch. I have to say, successful bookmark costume. So props to you.
Thank you.
Flowers to you.
Flowers to me and to my husband, really, because he created the structure. And it turned out very well. I added a lot of the other finishing touches, but I couldn't have done it without his confidence because I was basically like, I just give up. I cannot even conceptualize how to make this thing.
He talks you through it.
Yeah. And it was very well liked by people. I was really afraid that he would be made fun of. And it doesn't seem like anyone made fun of him.
I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at his age and at our school, I don't think it's something that people make fun of people for.
Yeah.
But it was very uncomfortable for him to walk around with. And so that's also why I think he was walking in a zigzag, because his friends were going so fast.
Zigzag.
And he's like, they're not waiting for me. They're leaving me behind. And I'm like, no, it's because they're excited, but you're also walking hella slow.
Yeah.
But he's decided that he's going to trade in his candy for a Lego. So
smart.
It was... For not? I don't know. Maybe not all for not, but it was fun.
It was actually very sturdily made too, because I was there at the end of the night and it looked tip-top shape.
Yeah, so if anybody here wants to purchase a bookmark costume for your very cool child, I will sell it to you.
I'm pretty sure you're going to have to give people money to take that bookmark costume.
Did anyone yesterday recognize who you were?
No. Actually, no. I am very shocked how white this neighborhood is.
Yeah.
It is like nobody here. You know, I think because we live in a world of TikTok and algorithms that make it seem like.
You're like basically in your own echo chamber. Everybody else must be seeing the same thing, must be feeling the same thing, must have experienced the same thing. But in fact.
And Culinary Wars is so huge. Yeah, and all of our friends are talking about it.
Yeah, we also have another subset of friends who are more Asian, and that's their world, right? So like we see and hear that, and we're like, must be reflective of what the rest of the world is like.
Right. But our neighborhood is actually what's reflective of the rest of the world, and nobody here is watching Korean dramas. Nobody is listening to Korean pop music. nobody's watching Culinary Class Wars. I think the extent of it is they'll watch Squid Games. So it has to be like that big for it to get on their radar. Although one of our very Caucasian friends the other day comes up to me and my husband is like, oh, I'm really loving this APT song from Rosé. And my husband lit up. He just like likes her 10 times better now.
Oh my God.
So that's all it takes. So no,
that's a mark of coolness. Yeah. Because that's like a Gen Z thing too. So
love that song. What an earworm. Gosh. That song is stuck in my head.
There is a Korean mommies group that I'm part of on Facebook. And a lot of these moms were dressing up as Rosé and their husbands as Bruno Mars for Halloween, which is a great costume too.
But again, in this neighborhood, nobody would have gone.
However, my husband in my costume, mm-hmm. yesterday was a little more low effort than we put in even on the weekend because we went to this party on the weekend. A lot of people got it.
Oh, good. Okay. And so let's do a refresh in case people didn't listen to the last episode. I was Napoli Mafia from Culinary Class Wars, and you were?
The Korean female sharpshooter in the Paris Olympics, and I believe she won the gold medal. She was just such a badass because she was pointing her gun with one hand. Most others, you know, needed both hands for the reverberation. They had all this special equipment. She did have special equipment, but it looked really cool. And then on top of that, she had a little stuffy that she attached to her pant belt because her daughter wanted to give it to her as a good luck charm. So she's like this badass woman and then has this cute little thing. And then my husband dressed up as a Turkish sharpshooter who was also notable. There were a ton of memes about him because he similarly shot with one hand. He just had his turkey shirt on. He didn't have any special equipment. Everybody else has like earplugs, like a special zooming in device, none of it. And, you know, he looked like he kind of rolled out of bed a little bit, but he got the silver medal. And I think because we were a pair and mm-hmm. people were able to identify who we were. But I was on a text thread with a bunch of people who were at the party. And one friend had sent a picture of me, and a woman who I don't know responded, oh my gosh, the sharpshooters were so happy I recognized them. And she's like, I know that desperate feeling of having people, of wanting people to recognize the obscure costume that you have on. And I was like, 100%. I was thrilled. Like, she was the first person that came up to me. She's like, oh my God, sharpshooters.
That's awesome. Okay, so a successful Halloween on the books for both of us. I did take a day off on Monday because the busiest time of year at work is coming up for me. So I was like, I just need a day off. So I chose to go to the city. I have all these gift certificates, all these fancy Western spas, but ooh. I chose with my Monday off to go to the nice Jimjilbang, the Korean spa in the city. It was so nice. I straight up snored in the red clay ballroom.
Oh, dear. I hear that, lady.
I really relaxed.
Did you get the scrub down?
I did get the scrub down. For those listeners,
I was
going to
say, your skin is glowing.
No. For those listeners who've never been to a Korean spa, there are these ladies in black lingerie that make you lay on a plastic table.
I don't
know
if I would call it lingerie so much as just lacy underwear and bra.
Yeah, I mean, is that not lingerie? It's always lacy. I don't know why.
It's always lacy. I mean, wouldn't they rather be wearing a bathing suit?
I guess undies are more breathable than a bathing suit.
Because I'm assuming they're doing that because you're getting wet, right? You're scrubbing and then you're like throwing water onto the body. Some of that splashes onto you. I don't know. I feel like it's not protective for the orifices.
Mm-hmm. Well, there must be, I mean, look, this is a tradition honed through the years. So there must be a reason why they're choosing black lingerie over a swimsuit. But they make you lay on a plastic table and then they like flip you over like a fish and scrub every inch of your naked bod.
Oh, every crevice.
I mean, you're losing your virginity at this point.
Oh, yeah.
It is that.
Finger splayed everywhere.
Deep. And so I barely loofah on a day-to-day basis. So you could just imagine.
I'm sorry. Let's back this up. What?
So I have a loofah.
Okay, the fact that you're even just using a loofah is really boggling my mind.
I don't. Well, what do you use? Like
I use that Japanese long scrubby towel.
But the only benefit of that scrubby towel. Okay, so you're saying that's like rougher than a loofah.
Right. It's like a physical exfoliation.
Yeah. So that's technically what those ladies are using. Too,
yes.
But that's like
what
on a glove.
Yeah.
It's so rough. So on a daily, I'll use a soft Western loofah. Because I am a soft you just Western said
you're
woman.
Not, you're barely using that.
Barely.
So like, what's happening? You just get your hand and you slap on a little bit of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like hand, soap, body, don't do legs, go straight to feet.
Oh.
Do.
First of all, are these things that you want to be saying on this podcast right now?
But there was a whole thing on the internet about it. Like, do you wash your legs? And everyone's like, no, you just let
there's a whole thing on the internet about this?
Yes. And like you like just let the soapy water just run down your legs. Or do you actually scrub your legs?
Okay, for the second time on this podcast within 10 minutes, my eyes right now. You should see my eyes.
I think it's a thing.
I'm just in shock. You know, again, like, you know, we were talking about learning about each other, the 360 view. I just, every week, I learn something new. I don't know if I wanted to learn that piece.
Are you shocked that I'm not a big loofer?
I guess I'm not shocked, but... It takes so little effort that I'm curious as to why.
I don't always trust the cleanliness of these loofahs that kind of sit in a wet shower day in, day out.
Okay.
There's no washing it. And it's like kind of gross. I don't know. Like we're not throwing it in the washing machine. So I'd rather just use my hands than I don't know. I don't know what mildews are on there. So okay. I don't really like them.
Okay.
So is it ironic that the reason why I don't use them is actually because of cleanliness?
You'd rather that your dirt body be dirty and have a layer of dirt.
Okay. Well, I mean, the layers of dirt is what I go to these ladies for.
Okay.
Because they just scrub the shit off of me. And yeah, I came out 5 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
Pretty
you
sure.
You feel so clean.
You do. I'm pretty sure the drains of San Francisco were clogged.
Were clogged. Well, did they say it looks like Jajangmyeon is coming off of your body?
The woman had no words, I'm pretty sure. She went, you know, and also because I'm not Korean, they don't shame us. Like they don't shame non-Koreans.
You didn't hear Jajangmyeon while she was talking to her coworker on the side?
So yeah, that was my day off.
Oh, that does sound lovely.
Yeah.
So before we get into what people are here for, I have to make an apology. Uh-huh. Okay. Last week, I said something about Perilla Oil and Jin from BTS publishing a recipe. I got a text message from one of my college roommates, and she's like, Julie, a lot of my friends call me Julie, I'm sorry, that's wrong. It was Jungkook. And I was like, oh, dear God, I have upset the army.
And We got a comment.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm going to have to make a public apology because now the army is going to come after me.
Of all the things that we've said, like bullshit on this podcast that have been totally
wrong.
Just spewing
misinformation constantly, but then that is going to get us in trouble. So I think we got to like set the record straight before anybody goes out and cancels me for it. Mm-hmm. It was Jungkook. He had a recipe that included Perilla oil. And so I am sorry, everybody.
Yes. Okay. She's on her knees and she's doing a bow right now to the army. Well, I've seen Jungkook cook on one of these variety shows before, and I feel like he is the black spoon of BTS.
Oh, that would be fun if they made it like a celebrity cook-off.
Yeah, but all they'd make is ramen.
Yeah.
Sad. Unfortunately, Jungkook isn't on Culinary Class Wars, but we have plenty to talk about still. We are covering episodes 5 and 6 today. We continue with the one-on-one black spoon versus white spoon matches. By the end of this blind taste testing, these poor judges have inhaled 40 gigantic spoonfuls of food. My husband was watching like an interview or a variety show, and these guys were on there, and they were saying that during the tasting, the producers never let anybody else other than the two main judges taste any of the food. Through all of these battles, only the two judges got to try any of the food, and then they just tossed everything else.
Oh my gosh, why?
I have no idea. But I mean, I think the purity of it, right? Like if other people are tasting it, there's going to be comments maybe and like second guessing. I don't know. So they just didn't let any of that happen. So they just tossed it all out.
I was wondering if they were like throwing it out into a bucket after chewing on it, because I couldn't imagine having even an accurate or a fair decision just because I'd be so full. You know, sometimes when I'm full and I eat something really tasty, I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah, I know. In these two episodes, we see a lot of the last white spoon Michelin stars get kicked off one by one. The first white spoon that we see in the matchup is white spoon Joseph. He is the Australian. There's two foreigners. in the White Spoons, and it's Fabri, who we've talked about and we'll talk about later, and also this guy, Chef Joseph, who's definitely the quieter one. He runs a one-star Michelin restaurant called Evet in Apgujeong. His expertise is Korean fine dining using only Korean ingredients, and his dishes look amazing. His background is he's an Australian. He has worked at the French Laundry. He went around Asia doing pop-ups and liked Korea, so he stayed there and has had a restaurant there since 2018. Snagged the Michelin Seoul Young Chef of the Year Award in 2020 and 2021. So he's a pretty prominent chef in Seoul, it sounds like. Yeah. And it's pretty impressive to win a Michelin star on a cuisine that you're pretty new to, I think.
Yeah, and that's what's fascinating about this guy is that he only cooks with Korean ingredients. So for him to integrate ingredients that he's probably not familiar with or flavors that he's not used to working with. And I read an interview with him after this competition, and he was like, there were just a lot of things that they didn't explain, and I would have changed my strategy if I knew it was just like a one bite, or if I knew it was going to be blind, you know. And also he was like, there were hours that passed between me making it and it being served, and I probably would have done a different dish if I knew that much time would have passed. You got to give props to the guy, and I think he was a very sweet contestant.
Oh yeah, he's very mild mannered, he's very respectful.
And he was very happy when Torai, which is the word for crazy person.
Well, they call him cooking maniac in the subtitles.
This is a very nice translation. Usually it's like fucking crazy person. But anyway, Joseph would be so happy when Torai would get positive feedback. And I thought that was very sweet.
I know. I mean, he won the Michelin Seoul Young Chef of the Year Award. But also, like, Korean chefs, where you at? You know, like, you're letting this white guy who just showed up win your awards. You know, this white colonizer taking your awards. Although Australia hasn't actually colonized anything. But they are part of the Commonwealth. So, you know.
They haven't colonized, but they have taken over the Aboriginals.
That's true. Anyway. That's true. Okay, yeah. So, while he's very impressive.
Yeah.
It's like, guys.
Yeah, also.
Don't let this guy swoop in and steal your awards, you know. So his opponent is Cooking Maniac. He calls himself a honey badger. So which made me look up the OG viral YouTube video of the honey badger.
Oh.
Honey badger don't care. Honey badger don't give a shit. And it's totally
that's
his
him.
Vibe.
Yeah. Right. And that's exactly what he says. He's like, there could be lions and tigers near me.
Whoa, says the bird.
So they had to deal with this conger eel. And Koreans love eel.
Oh, do they?
Do you know why?
Why?
It is basically nature's Viagra.
Oh, is it?
It is great for men's vitality.
Oh, I thought you said abalone was. Everything is for men's vitality.
They're all.
This cooking maniac seems to know what he's doing with the eel. He starts slicing it very thin almost. So he's like breaking the bones versus Chef Joseph, who is pulling bones out one by one, which is very time consuming. It's very hard to watch Cooking Maniac cook. And I think there's been a lot of internet memes about him, and he's been on SNL.
Because he's Korea. Like a maniac?
He just cannot stay still. He has zero chill, this guy.
Yeah.
He wears all his emotions on his sleeve. He gives me nervous dog on an airplane energy. He just like...
Not very honey badger.
No, I want to put like a compression jacket on him. Just wrap him up in a weighted blanket.
Yeah, he was basically having a meltdown while the chefs were eating the food. Because he's like, oh my God, what is happening? Oh my God, I'm so fucked.
Chef Joseph actually gives him
a hug. Gives him a hug. I know, it's very sweet.
Cooking Maniac ends up coming out on top with his eel dish, which I can't say looked that great. He used like a foam... Sabayon, like it's like an egg cream.
Steamed kind of egg dish. So I think it probably visually wasn't that nice, but he incorporated Korean flavors really well in a very fine dining technique.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they were impressed by that. Also, Joseph used nasturtium.
What is that?
Did you see those little like green white leaves that he put on?
Mm-hmm.
Basically edible flowers.
Oh, did
so
he?
That's probably why he got kicked off.
Don't bring your flowers anywhere near this competition. I think the ultimate compliment was Chef An says the moment he tasted that dish, he knew it was Cooking Maniac.
Oh, yeah. But do you think it's because he has known Cooking Maniac?
I don't know. I mean, it must be, though, that he has such a distinct style that even Chef An, be it two dishes or 10, still knows it's him. Another white spoon Michelin star chef that gets booted is the Korean, Kim Do-yeon. He's the one who wears headphones while he cooks. He's listening to music. He's really into dried and preserved ingredients. And we see him in his own restaurant with all these dried animals and plants. Yeah. I mean, it looks like a murderer's secret closet. Yeah, he's like the Dexter of Michelin chefs. I mean, this guy, I would not want to be caught in a back alley.
Yeah. And he looks like he
has just taken a huge toke out of a joint.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying he needs an eyelid lift, but.
Listen. Anyway, but he had dried duck throat, things that I've never heard of, but he uses them to make broth.
Or witch's brew. Yeah, I don't know what knows, he's up right? to. He ends up losing to
Panchan chef. I don't know what his translation was.
He also wears glasses, right, this guy?
Yeah.
He ends up being kind of important to Triple Star in the next battle. He's kind of his right-hand man. Yes,
that's right.
So he also has kind of a quiet confidence about him, and he definitely seems very skilled. All the White Spoons are very shocked at this knockout. So another Michelin star gone. Another Michelin star White Spoon chef, Jin Soon.
And he owns a restaurant called Jin Jin.
Chinese.
Oh, is it a Chinese restaurant? Mm-hmm.
He won a Michelin star 3 years in the past. He doesn't have one now, but he won a few years ago. He goes against the comic book chef, who we've learned has learned all of his skills from comic books. I find this very curious. I don't understand this. The recipes aren't in the comic book.
I find it suspicious. There's something also about him as a person. I don't know. There's something about him that feels very mysterious.
Yes.
I can't figure him out. I feel like he's like not telling us the whole story.
Right. It's a little unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is also a person who is nose deep so much in comic books. So he must kind of be like a more of an introvert.
Yes.
You know, he definitely has a different vibe than a lot of these very ego driven, louder chefs that we're seeing.
And he does seem quite smart. Mm-hmm. You know, like the kind of person he's like, it's on this page, this book. This is where I learned it. You know, I think that's a special kind of skill.
They get pumpkin, which I think is probably very hard.
And this is a special pumpkin called 늙은 호박. 늙은 means old. Mm-hmm. This way it's like that flat, very waxy looking. And after I had my kids, postpartum, they really encourage you to eat this because it reduces a lot of inflammation and swelling. But it's very hard to procure.
So the White Spoon goes with a sweet and sour sauce. It's very Chinese. He does like a pork and shrimp filled pumpkin. Chinese people will put pork and shrimp and fill anything with it. I grew up eating it in cucumbers and you like steam it. Yeah. So you basically
roll it up in cucumbers. Kind of like how
you take a cucumber and you core out the seeds. So then and then you stuff the pork mixture inside the cucumber. And then you steam it.
Yeah.
So it's steaming in its own juices. And it's delicious.
That sounds good. But I find it curious that you're eating a steamed cucumber. That's like not something that I would never think to do.
I know. Same. I think that's the only dish I've ever eaten with steamed cucumber.
Okay. Can I ask you a random question? So I've been going to this place that has hot pot. And every time I go, they give me a platter of veggies. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they always put lettuce on it.
Like iceberg or romaine?
No, romaine lettuce. Uh-huh. I'm like, what, is this garnish? Like, what a waste of space. And then I look over at the Chinese people and they're all dipping it and eating it. And I'm like, steamed lettuce just sounds disgusting.
I don't think it's a traditional thing. I think it's just that it's cheap. Comic book chef uses the pumpkin and makes a tart with a mala oil. I think maybe what you see in him is like a quiet confidence for a guy who says all he did was learn it from a comic book, but he's so confident that it makes you suspicious that he must have other training.
I also, as I get older, have realized that obviously this is something I think that occurs throughout our society, but we kind of have a negative perception of introverts. It's an unfair perception. But I always think like there's something else going on. They're keeping something from me. You know, like I'm wanting somebody to be really open and tell me everything that's going on or tell me what they're feeling and how they got to this point. But when people are cagey about those things, I'm always like, you're keeping something from me.
You're like a honey badger. You wear every emotion on your sleeve and you don't like it when anybody is not honey badger like you.
But he uses a spring roll for the tart crust.
The pastry, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is also a really popular thing that's going on.
Oh.
Like, I don't know if it's just Korea, but I've seen it even on my TikTok. So I think he's also interesting because he's like really in tune with like trends, mm-hmm. but also with what's going on in comic books. But this thing with spring rolls is I have seen people make spring roll croissants. Have you seen this?
No.
So they get the spring roll, you dip it in some hot water, and then you just brush it with like butter and an egg wash. You cut them into triangles and you start to just roll them up and put them in the air fryer. Has the same crunch and the same airiness as a croissant, but it's done very quickly and maybe not as bad for you. Wow. I've been wanting to try that, but I thought that was kind of cool that he incorporated that into his dish.
Unfortunately, he doesn't make it.
Yeah.
He gets booted. The last of the Michelin star white spoon chefs is Chef Fabrizio Fabri. He's our golden retriever chef. We've seen him a lot cheering his sous chef on in the last battles. He's had a Michelin star at his restaurant in Italy for 15 years, which is very impressive.
But also, what is he doing in Korea? You know, like you have a Michelin star for 15 years and then you're running away to Korea. Something he's like,
the conspiracy Interpol theorist.
Is coming after him or something.
Maybe he just likes your freaking culture. When people show your country love, you're like, oh my God, it warms my heart. And then this guy, you're like, there's something wrong. What is he hiding from?
I'm just saying. Mafia. It's like an odd, I find going to Korea to be an odd move.
Agree.
Don't you think? Objectively speaking. I mean, I'm happy for people to love Korea. But
Koreans do love their pastas, just like the Japanese before them.
Yes.
They love their pastas.
That's true.
You'll see very fancy pasta restaurants in these big malls, you know, like sitting in the food court. So, yeah. I mean, I get there's opportunity here. Maybe he's just a good businessman.
Okay.
He goes up against Napoli Mafia.
By the way, we need to clarify. Napoli Mafia. It's with a T.
Yes.
Did you know this?
I always been calling him Mafia, but I think that's just a bad translation.
No, it's a play on words. Mat is taste. So we go, oh, 맛있어 is actually 맛있어. That means, does it taste good? So they were trying to use the word mafia and then you said matfia. And I guess that's his moniker because he makes food that tastes really good. You're like, oh God, they don't know how to spell there.
I was like, what is this? Is this a play on words? Is this a mistake? They get skate fish.
Have you ever had that?
No, but I've seen somebody pull it up in the bay on the Embarcadero.
What?
When they're fishing, people fish off the Embarcadero and they pulled up a skate. It must have been a skate fish. And everybody who was watching them thought it was a stingray.
It looks like a stingray, yes.
So everyone was like shaming him to send it back. But, you know, he was like, it's a skate fish. That's my only exposure to skate fish. Apparently it stinks really bad. That's what it seemed like on the show.
Well, from what I understand, in Korea, they ferment it, like purposefully. Traditionally, what they would do is they would store it in compost.
Oh.
To let it ferment. So I guess that's probably why it stinks. And then, or you put it in a pile of straw. Obviously, they don't do that anymore. But usually the way I've seen it, and I've never eaten it, but I've seen it sliced raw.
Like and, sashimi.
Yes, sashimi. And then you eat it like a posam. So you usually eat it with the mugunji, which came up last week, that really fermented kimchi. And sometimes with pork, and then you wrap it up. But I don't think it's a common food. It's common in a certain area where they eat a lot of really kind of stinky fermented foods.
Mafia does his go-to risotto with a skate fish tartare and a liver sauce. So he does a Western dish. Chef Fabri uses that aged kimchi that we saw last week, and he goes more of a Korean style, which I thought was interesting that they kind of flipped.
Mm-hmm.
Chef Fabri also fries his skate fish. And so Chef An in the judging, it's 1-1. They don't agree on who wins it. Chef An is on Mafia's side. And he says, frying something makes everything taste good. So he takes offense that you can't just fry something up because you could fry any fish.
You could have fried any fish and it wouldn't have changed it. Like he didn't utilize the skate in a way that like made the skate shine.
Yeah. Chef Pak again is though, it tasted good though, right?
Right.
So again, just differences in the way that they judge. And then finally on the one-on-ones, we see the Chinese showdown, the very distinguished Chef Lu Qinglai versus self-made chef. These guys both wear their cooking hats, like a chef's hat.
And self-made chef had said previously that he used to be like a delivery person for Chinese restaurants. And kind of over time, he learned a lot of techniques just by osmosis and being around Chinese chefs, which is incredible.
Very impressive.
And he goes up against
this dinosaur.
Like, well, I mean, dinosaur, but also world famous chef, right? He's won. It looked like he won
awards. I mean, everyone is wowed very by respectful.
Him. Yeah, they're so respectful.
Yes. They wear these hats. So I had to look up like these two guys. Why only the Chinese chefs are wearing this hat? It's called a toque hat. And so it's just an old school chef's hat. So like in Ratatouille, they wear it like in French dining too. And I just was studying Ratatouille for my kids' Halloween costume. And so that type of hat is actually reserved for seniors in the kitchen.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And so Chef Lu Qinglai's hat is tall. Like it's like 16 inches tall.
So it grows like every year you get more awards and more respect.
According to him, size matters.
That's right. Yeah. But that must be a real tough balancing act to have that on your head while you're cooking. Are they like pinned in?
Must be pinned.
Seems cumbersome.
They get oxtail, which I wouldn't assume is that hard of an ingredient, but they're actually saying it's quite hard, all the chefs.
Well, also because when you think about Korean food and making like a kumtang with that kind of oxtail,
which is a broth,
it takes a long time. I mean, you like soft. Almost like overnight you have to be boiling that. So for them to achieve the same softness and flavor in, I don't know, 100 minutes or something mm-hmm. is probably really difficult to achieve.
Self-made chef ends up winning it, but he wins it with a Dongpo roe sauce. Again.
You're over it.
OMG. How many times do I have to see Dongpo roe? It's not the last. We're going to see it again in these two episodes.
Yes.
Lu Qinglai ends up losing and gets knocked out.
Everyone is shocked. Self-made chef gets down on his knees and bows to him because he doesn't want him to feel like he
doesn't understand the importance of him. Even Chef Peck gets up to shake his hand.
Yes.
And bows to him.
Well, when they took off their blindfolds, both judges like kind of did like a half stand and bowed mm-hmm. because I think he's such a senior, well-respected person that they have to let him know that like, oh, we know who you are.
Yes. And then when they knocked him out, they have to.
They were like, sorry, this just had to be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
We were blindfolded.
So we breeze through a lot of the other eliminations. But after everybody is done, the final count is 11 white spoons and must be 9 black spoons.
Yes.
So they make it seem like, oh, hey, judges, you get to pick 2 of the eliminated chefs to save.
A super pass.
And of course, they have to choose 2 black spoons right. to even things out.
Yes.
Chef Peck picks
the goddess of Chinese cuisine. I love that.
It's kind of sad because she gets picked, but her mentor doesn't.
Right.
But they couldn't pick a white spoon. Yeah. It would be uneven. Chef An picks black spoon comic book chef. I think this was very shocking.
That was shocking. There's probably a lot going on. They're like, we need to diversify. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of fine dining people. It's like get an underdog.
Yeah. Who would you have picked to save?
You know, I think I would pick Joseph.
Mm-hmm. Despite, the white spoon.
Yeah, the white spoon. Despite having said that I wanted to keep our country pure of the Michelin stars. I think that having someone who can utilize Korean ingredients in a way that most Koreans couldn't fathom is pretty revolutionary. And I think it would have been a very unique take on this show. What about you?
I'm not sure I agree with the comic book chef choice. I would have loved, again, they couldn't pick a white spoon, but I would have loved to see the white spoon preserved veggies guy. The Dexter. I think he's just like an interesting character. He's so different than the rest of them. I would have loved to see how he operates in a team battle. I kind of wanted to just see more of what he was about. And I don't think we saw much of him at all. We move on to the black versus white spoons third round. It's the team battle. We see the chamber of ingredients. A lot of what?
The reactions were crazy. Like, oh my God.
People were freaking out. These 2 containers colored blue and red, they get lifted up into the air and they uncover
meat,
like racks of meat.
And then a room full of fresh, live seafood.
Yeah. One of the chefs is like, oh, wait, they want us to kill our own fish.
Yeah. Like, I usually have my people do that.
Yeah. These white spoons have not butchered meat in a very long time. Do Koreans buy live fish like from the market?
Yeah. If you go to an H Mart, they have a lot of live fish in the cases.
I grew up going to Ranch 99. this was my weekends in my childhood. You drive out from where we lived in the suburbs and you go to Monterey Park where all the Chinese groceries are. My brother and I would just sit there watching. The fish tanks would be all there. People come up and then they pick the fish they want. And then the mongers would take a net and grab the fish and they'd put it on the floor. And there's like kind of a space.
On the floor?
Yeah, there's a space in between the counters.
Yes.
That you can kind of see in between and on the floor. And so we would just sit there, watch them beat these fish.
Oh, dear.
With a stick.
Oh, God.
And then wrap it up and then send it away. And that's what.
That's how they kill them?
Yeah, they just beat them with a stick and put them in a bag. How do the Koreans do it at the market?
They get a knife and chop its head off.
Oh, no. The Chinese need the heads on.
Oh, right.
And that's the whole point.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. I've never watched that. Nor have I been interested to.
Yeah, so that's how we spent our afternoons on the weekends in
my
childhood.
Oh, my God. That shocks me. I'm now so curious. I'm sure that's how they do it. My mom will always bring the whole fish home. And I'm like, why don't you just have them like fillet it? And she's like, no, well, one, that costs extra money. They like charge you for that.
Yeah.
And then she's like, you got to eat all this stuff. I like to have mine like cleanly just the fillet.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You can just see immediately the difference in how the black spoon and the white spoon teams operate. The black spoon teams very much have a team mentality. I mean, they're the underdogs,
right? They are the underdogs. And they've always worked in a kitchen where they've had to defer to the head chef. So it's a lot of, yes, chef, I'm going to do as I'm told.
When they all have to segregate between who's going to be on the meat team and who's on the seafood team, the black spoon team says, okay, I may not be comfortable working with meat, but let's balance it out based on our cuisines and our expertise.
So strategic, very smart.
The white spoon team, on the other hand,
they're like, no, this is what I do. This is what I do. No, I can't do that. I've worked with me for 15 years. Can't do that.
It was definitely elders versus youngers. I
know.
Felt like.
I mean, that is really showing up in this show. These egos are going to be the death of them.
So there was a lot of egos, but I think ultimately what it came down to was team leadership. So the white spoons meet team picks team leader Cho Eun-ju. They say she's won one of the three biggest cooking competitions in the world. One of the chefs literally says, you're good at plating, so you should be the leader. Like, really? That's how you choose your leader?
Yeah.
A good plater? This team leader looks lost from the beginning.
She's also just like walking around, milling about, like not doing anything. And then she has a team of really strong personalities.
And they're all Chinese chefs, most of them.
Most of them.
And so they go with a Chinese dish, dongpo roe again. Pick another thing.
It seems like that is the most appealing dish. I've never had it, so I couldn't tell you, but
I mean, it's so famous. There are two pieces of jade that are carved in the Taiwan like National Museum. One of them is a Napa cabbage.
Oh.
And the other one is dongpo roe, like a pork belly. Yeah, so it is that famous.
Okay.
I'll take you to a restaurant. We'll go eat.
Yes, I need to try it.
The women on this team are all strong except the leader.
Yes, right. And that actually is a terrible combination because she is not giving any guidance or direction. But then you have women who are also asserting their opinion and not taking the direction. And it's just like a recipe for disaster.
I mean, let's just put it out there. Who is the worst white spoon? It's Sungkyung Longest.
It is Sungkyung Longest, but
no. There's no but.
There's no but.
She is the worst.
She is the worst, but I'm going to back up because so after this competition, apparently she has been getting death threats from Koreans about how terrible she is.
She doesn't deserve to be a white spoon.
Well, there's that
She's
argument.
She's a blogger.
Too. Well, that's exactly what people are saying. Like, how dare you? You think you're good enough to be a white spoon, and then you're a terrible person, and then you shit on the potatoes, and then you, like, act this way towards Kang Nok and whatever. But I don't think that deserves her getting death threats. And so she's been posting on her social media, like, guys, please don't do this to me and my family. Like, I don't deserve this. But also she was really upset because she's like, I wouldn't have expected it from my people, from Koreans.
Has she not seen the netizens? They'll take down their own people, no big deal. She shows up very badly.
Oh, she shows up badly. I will say, before I found out about all of the death threats and, you know, the trolls, I was like, God, she is so annoying.
You can be the loudest in the room in certain cases if it's helping the cause.
Right.
And she's loud for no reason. And then she ends up being wrong. She's challenging Kang Rook. And everybody eats they taste both
of their dishes, right.
And you can just see her eat shit when she's overruled, but she still can't
admit it. But she can't admit it. She's like, I didn't think that was good.
If we knew it was going to be a sauce, then why did he make me do all that work?
She did not do herself any favors.
And this is up against Chef Jung Ji-sun,
the RBF
queen of dim sum.
Queen of dim sum, who we did not like in the one-on-one challenge, but she shows up better here because she's at least like, let's work together.
You realize the stark difference when you look at the Black Spoon team.
Yes.
They automatically pick triple star. I think everybody there is like,
Well, they respect him, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the other difference is the White Spoons are like, no, I'm the shit. No, I'm the shit. No, like, what? I have five stars or whatever. To the Black Spoons are like, well, yeah, I'm just a cafeteria lady. Yeah, you worked in French Laundry? Yes, you be the leader.
His focus is to meld everyone's opinions together. He delegated. He gave out roles based on skills. They all fell in line. They did tasting together. When they all decided that it wasn't right, they shifted gears.
Yes. When they decided that they were going in a different direction of like how they were chopping the vegetables, Omokase Auntie and cafeteria lady immediately sprang into action.
Yeah.
Nobody was like, no, that's a dumb idea. Nobody was arguing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that contrast really made people like Sungyeong Longus even less.
It's a lesson to all of us who run teams at work or even run our households, right? Trust is the big difference. The White Spoons questioned everything each other were doing, and the Black Spoons totally trusted each other. It's a big lesson, I think.
It's also a big lesson as a parent. Mm-hmm. And I've realized it's because I've been doing a lot more volunteering at school. And there are some kids that need a lot more attention. And I realized that of course, it goes to my own children too. But when you're like, you can't do this. This is like terrible. They're going to naturally feel worse about it and not cooperate.
Yeah. We're not going to learn anything about cooking for our families. But we're going to learn how to treat them better. So ultimately, they have to plate out 100 portions of their meal for what turns out to be 100 judges sitting against the wall with masks on. It's like a masquerade parade.
Why 100? Have they not learned? They need an odd number to break the tie.
They're sitting in black shirts, white masks. It's very Halloween. They're all very expressionless.
Yes.
We don't know who they are. Like, they could be chefs. Yeah. We don't have any idea
just
who
they
are.
People off the street. They all look young, though.
They all look very young. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we end the episode with a cliffhanger. All the portions are doled out. Everyone makes it on time. The Chinese dish actually ends up turning out quite well, which is a testament to a White Spoon.
Yes. At the end of the day, they know what they're doing, even if it's a shit show behind the kitchen.
We won't see until next week the votes and how it shakes out. So that was it for the episodes. We have yet to talk about our daily dish. What would you have picked to eat out of all the dishes you saw on the two episodes?
So I know you said it did not look good, but I wanted to try Cooking Mania's Sabayon eel dish.
Mm. I'm not a big eel person as it is.
I enjoy eel, but not with that sauce. You know that, like, yeah,
like Japanese unagi restaurants. Mm.
I don't like it. It's too sweet for me.
Mm-hmm. How else?
But
do
I guess
you
I've
eel?
Never had it without it, so I don't really care about the eel part. But I thought the sabayon looks so good. I also love kaeranjim, which is the steamed egg dish, the Korean steamed eggs dish, and I think it was reminiscent of that. But I would also say I just want to eat dongbo-ro, so you better take me.
I will. We gotta find a good place. My daily dish, I think, was actually Napoli Mafia's skate fish dish. That looked really interesting. I love a liver sauce.
liver sauce.
I just find it interesting, and it's so healthful. And then lastly, Mary F. Kill.
Okay, well, before we get into that, have you seen the latest scandal with Triple Star?
Yes, I have. I don't know how much credence to give it. I saw it on TikTok.
Well, I think it's probably real. I also don't know how it's relevant to anything. And I find it really fascinating that ex-spouses would come out to smear
this takedown.
Yeah, their former spouse who it sounds like she had a stake in his company or
okay,
in his
so
restaurant.
Explain what this drama is.
So the drama is he was married. And
this is Triple Star.
Triple Star, who is the fine dining chef.
He's the hottie.
He's a hottie. He has the glasses. He has a very impressive career. So his ex-wife has come out since he has become famous. And she has come out to smear his great reputation. She's accusing him of, cheating on her during their marriage. Part of which was that he forced her to be with other men. I don't know what that is about. Secondly, that he would be watching CCTV tapes of other women in his restaurant.
Oof.
I don't know doing what with that. And then writing these profuse apology letters that were like pages and pages. There's apparently 40 letters that he's written.
Like handwritten.
Handwritten, all in Korean. And then on top of that, she...
And the letters are to her to apologize.
To apologize.
Yes.
And then it seems that she must have a lot of money and she must be quite powerful. So she is accusing him of having gotten these high profile jobs through her bribery of certain people. She had invested a lot of money into his current restaurant. So I'm like, you have a stake in his business. Like, is this...
Like, what is the point?
And smart. Like, yeah, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
She's probably just upset because all these women are thirsting for him.
Yeah. It's Schadenfreude, right? You can't stand to see the others around you do well.
Right.
If it's all true, that does really suck. All of it is just kind of gnarly.
Yeah. It's also like, I didn't really want to know that.
Yeah.
I didn't care to know about all that kind of stuff.
Know.
Like,
can we just... love our reality show contestants.
Let us love from afar.
Yes.
So with that being said.
You don't want to marry him anymore? If it's all true, then we should kill him.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to marry him. I don't want that in my life. I'm going to have to marry Honey Badger.
Honey Badger. You guys would make quite a pair.
I think we would just be like, ah! Just bouncing off the walls together.
Laughing, then crying, and then laughing, yeah, exactly. And then crying. He has such a soft side to him.
Yes.
Right? And he's so respectful of Chef Joseph and just so grateful to be there. I see why you would want to marry him.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you on that one. I think there's a sweetness to him that I don't think I can handle that energy, but there is such a sweet side of him that we saw this week. F. It's tough because we're actually only really seeing a few of them prominently.
Yes.
I'm really interested in that Black Spoon guy that ends up on Triple Star's team as his right-hand man. He has what glasses also. He's handsome. But they kind of don't really show him, so I don't know very much about. I can't even recall his name off the top of my head.
He's the one that's like the banchan chef, like side dishes. He's really good at side dishes.
Nobody that effable these two episodes.
Well, maybe I'm gonna take your answer from last week, and I think the RBF Chinese lady, she showed a different side of herself this week.
Yes.
Yeah, a little spicy, a little sweet.
And kill.
It's gotta be Sungkyung.
It's gotta be Sungkyung. Get your fake ass white spoon out of here. I am sorry about the death threats, but go back to your blog.
Okay. Well, so there's actually a whole thread on Reddit about why she should not have been a white spoon, and people are debating this. And somebody made this point, you know, they said white spoons were recognizable names. And so she has quite a following, and people are like, well, nobody in Korea knows her. And they're like, but it's not about Korea. People in the West know her. Mm-hmm. And I think they wanted to give people who, the Western people, a little bit more
reason to latch on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to come, you know, to be fair, they said on this Reddit thread that she's like never really had a restaurant. She like maybe a very short stint. She had a food truck in Hawaii. She's not somebody who's prolific in like the culinary world. Like she's a home food chef. And there are all of these YouTubers who are Black chefs, and they had a bigger following than she did. So there's a lot of controversy there. That's the reason why Koreans are mad.
Yes. I'm mad along with them. Okay. That was it for Culinary Wars episodes 5 and 6. We have episodes 7 and 8 coming up. Can't wait to watch them and recap them with you guys. We will talk to you next week. Until then, be well.
Bye.